Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, Spirited Conversations with Interesting People. I am your host, Christopher Hart, and every week I sit down with interesting people, special people, and this week is no exception. I found out about Katie Sackhoff in 2011 when I was introduced to a show called Battlestar Galactica, and I binge-watched the entire series. I could not be a bigger fan, and immediately, right after I finished, she was in a show called Longmire, 7 seasons. Fantastic show. And now she's in another show called Another Life. I watched season 1 with my wife. We loved it. It was fantastic. It's out of, you know, it's space travel. And very recently, I saw her in Star Wars The Mandalorian as Bo-Katan. She has worked nonstop for the past 20 years. And her cultural impact on the pop culture zeitgeist, I say zeitgeist too much on the show, I'm sorry, is a magnitude greater than I think most people could ever hope for. Her impact is insane and incredible, and she is, and I feel incredibly lucky to sit down with none other than Katie Sackhoff. Cheers. I made this post last night on Twitter saying the ineffable Katie Sackhoff, and I woke up to a lot of your fans making inappropriate jokes about the word I used. They're like, what does ineffable mean? Oh, she's very effable. I was like, that's not what I meant. I'm just a fan. Like I was,
I think I literally saw them and I was crying with laughter. I was like, listen, when you grow up with a last name like Sackhoff, you've heard it all. So it was actually a new one that I hadn't heard before. Yeah. I was like, wow, that's new.
Did you got our care package we sent you?
I did. I have it right here. And you guys have no idea how hard it was to get my fiance to not open this. Like, I think he was trying to figure out if he could open it from the side.
Sure. I have it. So speaking of your fiance, right? Watching him geek out over Michael Rosenbaum, my spirit animal. I'm 33. I am such a Michael Rosenbaum fan. Smallville, when that show started, I was so when Clark in that show, Tom Welling was a freshman in high school. I was a freshman in high school. So I got to graduate with Superman. I was a massive Michael Rosenbaum fan. So watching those two interviews were the best.
It was really funny to me because so my fiance is a couple years younger than you, but his brother is a year older than you. So they are like right like where you were watching it, and they are very big Michael Rosenbaum fans. Robin's brother is an even more Michael Rosenbaum fan. And I wonder if it's because he's closer to your age. So there was like this like kinship of him being the same age as him.
He jokes about it on his podcast all the time, but he really was, in my opinion, the best live action Lex Luthor of all time. So I'll stop geeking out about him. I'm excited to geek out about you. I sent you a care package, a couple of goodies in there, and I tried to put them a box inside a box. So did you get the letter in the inside box?
I did.
Okay. All right. So we're good.
We're good. And then the box is sitting right next to me and I've got my box opener. Right?
There it is. Feel free to go ahead and open it. Okay. And while you're doing that, I'm going to pour me a beer because we like to drink on this show.
You know why I asked for this to be on Friday is because when I'm training for work, I only drink on Fridays. So I was like, we have to do this on Friday or I'm going to be a very, very poor guest on this show.
Well, I know you're a fitness nut. And so yeah. I would stay away from beers like this for sure.
We do have beers in our house though.
This is made from blue raspberry Fanta, strawberries and ice cream. So this is like 1,000 calories.
Is there really blue raspberry Fanta in there?
Yeah. Blue raspberry Fanta, strawberry and ice cream. This was a little collaboration from a local place called Urban South. They're super heavy fruit pureed beers. I mean, they really are 1,000 calories.
You have to look at this.
What's he doing?
I'm opening the box and he's stalking.
Well, there should be some glasses in there for him to feel free to pour him some too. So
I'm going to take you for just a second because you guys can bond over Mike and Michael Rosenbaum.
Oh, big fan.
He knows. So is he. That's so funny. Okay. So
one of the things I like to do is I like to try to find a birth year bottle.
You know, it's funny. I grew up with this bottle in my house.
Oh, really?
My dad had this.
I knew that. I did some research.
My dad had this in his house. I grew up with this. I never looked at it before. I mean, like, obviously it was just a really cool jug. I don't know if it even had liquor in it anymore when I was a kid, but I know this jug very well, actually. I was never a big whiskey fan. I mean, I think I went through my Jack and Coke phase for certain, but I was never like a big whiskey scotch fan. But when COVID happened and we got shut down, it called for whiskey. And so I started getting really into whiskey. We had Sexy Ice, which like is the big round things. I got really into it. I would sip it in the bathtub. I developed a nice taste for some whiskey, but this is a new thing for me actually. Because normally I'm, you know, a wine girl. So.
Well, drinking has, especially with my lovely wife, especially during COVID, everything has just kind of turned up a little bit, right? So it's something that's great, especially if you're binge watching a show. There was some stuff I'd love to immediately jump into with you because the interview you did with Michael, you were talking about binging Outlander. And Sam, let's talk about Sam Heughan for a minute. So Sam's been on the show a couple times. I'm a huge fan of his.
Yes.
So did you guys finish Outlander? Did you get all caught up?
I have not finished Outlander yet. It was my, you know, I watch it when Robin's out of town. It's like my fiance is right here. I am more in love with my fiance than any other human in this world. But Sam, I'm not blind.
You can say it. He's a damn good looking man.
Yeah.
You know, being sort of in the Ron Moore family with Battlestar Galactica, I felt like a bad friend. Like I had never seen Outlander. And it was, you know, after Battlestar, it was the thing that, you know, that he was most known for, except for obviously Star Trek. And now he's, you know, obviously got other projects. But I felt terrible that I'd never seen it. And so I went to sort of like, oh, I guess I'll watch this. And I binged it so hard, so fast. And I was like, and Robin was out of town. And I was like, this is, whoo.
Wait, so are you or are you not caught up?
I am not caught up. I am on season 4.
Okay, so there is, and this is not a spoiler, but I think as any of his fans that watch the show will agree, there is this scene, an episode in this last season in which he gets, there's a life or death situation that happens and their instinct is for both of them to immediately get naked. it was the most interesting judgment call, but anyone who's ever been in like a really passionate, you know, when you first start dating somebody, there is this comfort in each other. Right. And it was just, I'm watching it next to my wife, but I'm smiling so big cause I'm making fun of her cause I know she's really enjoying it.
There is this, I'm gonna put my headphones back on so you can hear me a little bit better, but there is,
there is this knowledge that you have as when you're in a relationship that's mature and healthy, that you know when you're watching something next to your partner that you're like, this is nice. A couple hours from now, I may be ready for some canoodling. Not even a couple hours, 20 minutes.
It's the exact opposite feeling. I have a couple of teenage daughters. It's the exact opposite feeling when you're watching a family movie together and something comes up and both of you are just as terrified, right? Like you're just, you know, let's watch something else. There's a new Disney movie out. Speaking of Disney, what a segue.
Well, tell me which one of these to pour first, because he got the cork out.
Okay. All right. So I think we should start with, there's a particular short squatty bottle in front of you that we're going to save for last. It's a single malt whiskey made in Texas that we put into a local honeybee. I know your mom's a honeybee farmer.
Yeah.
Did my homework. suck it, Michael Rosenbaum. And, we took a local honeybee farmer, put his honey in one of our whiskey barrels. And then after we were done aging the honey, we put a whiskey back into the honey barrel. So that is a really interesting cask strength, honeyed single malt Texas whiskey. So we'll save that for last, because that's going to affect everything up to that point.
I would imagine. Okay.
So I would start with, I think, what all did I send you? There's the rum, the Prideful Goat.
I have rum. I've got 10 High.
Okay.
The Prideful Goat, the honey.
Okay.
And Evan Williams.
Right. Kentucky. So let's, the 10 High is also from your birth year. That's the backup bottle. So you can open that on your birthday.
Okay.
The Prideful Goat.
All right.
So this is and it's already sold out. So anyone that messages me about it, it's already gone. It's a 15-year-old Kentucky bourbon. Me and my partner Randall. It's our whiskey. So, it's already sold. So I'm not trying to get the free plug from you. I just wanted you to enjoy it.
Thank you.
15-year-old Kentucky bourbon. And it's a really easy intro to getting our palates ready for what's about to happen.
Well,
I'm gonna pour me some Irish.
I'm excited for this. It smells beautiful. So I don't know a lot about whiskey. I can pretend, okay. That would just do a disservice to all of us. So I won't pretend.
How do you normally drink whiskey?
On ice. Is a bad, Robin is like, I'm a bad whiskey person.
Don't feel bad. Drink it how you like it. No judgment. But today we're going to play around with, that's a healthy pour. Oh,
is it
Lord.
A healthy pour?
That's a healthy pour.
Well, I figured that he's probably going to come in and out and take sips of everything.
I did include a couple extra glasses in there in case I figured Robin would be there. He may want to, I was thinking of both of you. I wanted you both to enjoy it. So feel free to pour him something.
Very sweet.
What I would do is take just literally the smallest nip and leave it in the front of your mouth.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. And just don't swallow it yet. Just enough to kind of coat your tongue and kind of get your salivating going. And it's going to start tingling a little bit to kind of get your mouth adjusted. I tell people when you drink whiskey, take smaller and smaller sips until you get it used to it, and then you'll naturally take larger sips. It's once your mouth gets used to alcohol, it's super simple.
There was a Glenlivet. It was one bottle that we opened that was so smoky.
Oh yeah,
that I couldn't drink it. I mean, it's not that I couldn't drink it. It just wasn't my favorite thing. My favorite is like the Belvini. I think that's how I'm pronouncing it the right way.
No, you're right. So peated whiskey is very popular, but it's very divisive.
In what way?
Well, some people love it. Some people like the taste of a burnt log in a campfire that sit there overnight. Some people don't, you know, some people, it's not their favorite thing whenever. You're
like, some people like the smell of dog shit. Others don't, you know?
Your career has been one of the most cram-packed 2 decades of anyone's. I mean, I was listening to an interview you did in 2019 with Chris Hardwick, and you said you feel like there's always something for me to do. Like, it's been a constant, you've always worked. I couldn't be, and it's not just like little things, 7 seasons here, seven seasons there. Right.
Yeah.
Have you thought about taking a break? It seems like you're so busy.
You know, it is so strange when you look back, because to me, it seems like yesterday I just started, you know? It was drilled into me when I first got into this industry that, women as they age are less desirable. You know, you turn 40 and the phone stops ringing. That is. So I was very pragmatic about it and was like, okay, all right. I mean, so many people have told me this, this is obviously the truth. It's not just one person, it's everyone. So be ready that there's going to be this time when they just stop calling. So I wanted to work as much as I could because I didn't want that moment to come and be like, oh, I should have worked harder, you know? And so what it sort of did was it put me in this position where, you know, I booked The Mandalorian when I turned 40. So it's sort of, I feel like now 40 sort of like, now I'm terrified 40 is the new 50. Be like, or, you know, 50 is the new 40. And all of a sudden in 10 years, it's going to drive. So I don't know if I'm ever going to slow down or stop, because I have this innate fear that it's going to stop for me, you know,
that there's a clock on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is sad on one side, on one hand, but on the other hand, you know, I enjoy my career so much, and I've really loved every single thing that I've ever been part of. So I wouldn't change a thing, to be honest.
Well, I listening to you talk about the Star Wars thing and sitting down with Jon Favreau and how overwhelmingly giddy with excitement you were over this opportunity. You come off extremely grateful and excited to work.
Yeah.
And you would think that that'd be more common, but you do seem grateful.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I am so grateful, you know, for a multitude of reasons. I get to wake up every day and live my childhood fantasy, you know, that's one of them. My parents also raised me to understand that things can change on a dime, and that we're incredibly lucky in our life. But I also, you know, my ex was over here the other day, and Robin and I were sort of talking with him, and he's a producer. He's been in the business a very, very long time. And we were just sort of having this conversation that I said, you know, it never ceases to amaze me. I think that more people around me, when I finally get to a certain level, are going to be excited and appreciative and humble and just sort of, and it's the opposite. And it blows my mind at how many people I meet that take it for granted. And I think that even that makes me even more grateful, because I never want to be the person that goes, if I lose it all tomorrow, so what? You know what I mean? Because I worked hard for it and I love it. So you have to be grateful.
I saw an article once that basically said they had developed a conspiracy theory about you joining The Mandalorian based on you liking a photo. There was a photo that you liked, and there was this entire fan theory that you were joining The Mandalorian universe before it had been announced. So my question is, and I wrote it down, maybe it's worded better. How surprised have you been, and how difficult has it become? And how has it changed over time when the herd of nerds ability to develop conspiracy theories around your career, right? Like joining the the Disney Star Wars universe, you're like, those non-disclosures are like,
yeah,
you know, intense. How exciting has it been for Robin to see? How excited has it been for you? Like, you guys have had powwows as to like, don't like unfollow these accounts, because they'll develop, like, if you are following Jon Favreau all of a sudden and you weren't following him a week ago, the theories are, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, for sure. There are definitely times where you will like a post, and 30 seconds later you think, don't do it. Go and like it really quick. You know, it's easy and it's hard for me, in the sense that, like, you know, I started in this industry without social media. So for me, I had a career before any of this. Right. And before the fans really had this large collective voice. And so it's very easy for me to sort of avoid the fan castings and speculations and things like that, because I just think it's all fun. But it's, you know, for Robin, I think, because he could care less, really, but about, you know, the fact that I'm in this industry. But he's so proud of me. I think that's the thing that's like caught me off guard the most with
how supportive
him.
He's been.
I've never seen anything like it. Like, I've really never seen anything like it. And there truly is this dual support in each other's dreams. And so when Mandalorian came out, we watched a bit of it. Well, we were on Twitter, sort of like looking at what people were saying at midnight, and like, they'd already started the GIFs and there were little videos and things up, and his face looked as excited as my face.
Right.
I was like, God, I've been looking for this man my entire life. So crazy. You know, that I don't know. And so when he comes to set, he came to set, with my dad, to the Mandalorian, and he was just so happy for me. That, like, I think his excitement of all of it doesn't even really come into play until I'm like, can we just geek out for a second? But he's really supportive. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's been interesting to binge so much of and kind of dive deep into, you know, everything the last couple of weeks. It's hard not to kind of put yourself in your shoes and to wonder what was going through your head, what was going through Robin's head, because Robin's been there for all of that. And the online conspiracies, and I'm sure there's someone that he knows that's texted him, or, you know, like, I'm sure there's people that are like, hey, are you going to be involved with this? Like, because there was an interview with, I'm trying to remember her name. Oh, I know who it is. She was in Orphan Black.
Rumored. Tatiana Maslany.
Yes. Yeah. Tatiana Maslany.
Maslany. Yeah. Excuse me. I butchered her last name.
It's okay. I'm saying it's okay as if she's my best friend. she was asked flat out if she was going to be in the new Marvel Universe, and she said no. And there's all this pressure when these rumors start. People texting, what's going on? Are you gonna, you know, and you can't say anything. I wanted to ask you, if have you taken or given any advice to anyone else? If, let's just say, some future Tom Holland watches my show and drinks whiskey, and there's a chance that he'll one day get one of these contracts. Have you thought about a piece of advice to offer to any of these people so they don't ruin it? You know, like, such a ruin their chances of. I mean, it's a big deal to be a part of the Disney, the Marvel universe.
It is. I think you have to weigh the things that are important in your life. And for me, it's always been to be an entertainer. I think that it may not be that for other people. You know, there may be other people, like we said, that could sort of take it or leave it. You know, it all goes away tomorrow and they're like, it's fine. But that has been my path. And so you have to be consciously aware that sometimes the role, the story, the project is bigger than you. And you just have to, I never for a single day forget that this is a gift and it could be gone tomorrow. And I have to remember that I'm an entertainer. And if it goes away, then I can't do that anymore. And so it is a game to a certain respect. You know, you have to be a role model and you have to decide what that looks like to you, and a representative of a company, and you have to decide what that looks like to you. And you know, to me, it's to be appreciative every day. So I would just, you know, tell a younger person to just know that going in, you know, how much does this mean to you, and what are you willing to do, you know?
To feel the weight of that. I mean, it's a massive thing. I mean, I think now the Marvel Universe is spanned, the current MCU is something like 15 years. And of course, Star Wars is going on 5 decades. Mm. So,
well, so, and you don't, sorry. I think the other thing as well, and now I'm getting tipsy because this is really good, but the other thing as well is
plan.
That like, you don't want to ruin the surprise, right? So that's a big thing. You have to trust that the employer, that the machine knows how to do this, right? In the sense that they know when to drop that you're in a project. They know how to build up that excitement in the fans. And, you know, I've seen people drop it too soon, or their people let press know and it gets out. It's not as fun as the moment where people see it. It's, you sort of have to, you know, that's what I meant. Like, decide what it means to you, decide how much this means to you and how much you want the attention, or how much you want to, you know, be a conduit for the art, the journey, the story, whatever it is, you know?
You know, you say that and I can't technically disagree with you. I mean, I get it. You're not wrong. But every single time I buy my wife something, a gift for a birthday, or my children, like my daughters, I ruin it every single time.
Tell them ahead of time.
Well, if a birthday comes in a week early, they're getting a birthday gift a week early. Like, I'm so excited to see their reaction, and it got to a point. At one point, my wife was like, "All right, like, can we just wait till my birthday, please? I'd rather you buy it the night before and give it to me the day of than, because I'm so excited to give her some good news, you know?"
Well, that's funny. Robin just did that to me. I just got my birthday present a month early because he was so excited for me to have it, because he knew I'd love it. But he was like, I was like, you know, limping, like I, you know, I hurt my hip working out, and he was like, "Oh, I want to give you your birthday present." And I'm like, and then like I'd move and he'd like, "Can I give you your birthday present?" And I'm like, "Well, you're obviously gonna give it to me." I was like, "No." And he was like, you know, he gave it to me. And partially I think it's because he wanted to use that too.
I'm the opposite. I'll take it early. Like I just want the excitement, right? It doesn't need to be on an arbitrary day that I just happen to be born. Just give me the gift.
I agree.
I put in front of you, I know for sure you like tequila. So I didn't send you tequila, but I sent you some rum. Are you a rum person? You drink rum?
I do drink rum, but I've never had rum on its own. Normally it goes with stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit different. So you being a fitness nut, and I tell this quite a bit to everybody that I know works out, the great, beautiful thing about distilled spirits, whether it's whiskey or rum, is its nutritional value, all zeros. Zero fat, zero carbs, zero sugar, zero everything. It's all zeros unless you add it to after. So you should still be, if you're a person who's into keto, you should still be in ketosis by drinking these things. But I sent you a bottle of rum that we did. I believe it may have been the 16-year-old. What does it say?
Yeah, it says 16. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's a Guyana rum. I would do a real small pour because
you've already figured me out. My pores are always so big. Robin's like, "Jesus, Katie." I'm like, "Well, I'm going to sit in the bath for a while. I don't want to have to come back down."
So that rum in particular is from the only distillery in Guyana, and it's from the oldest wooden pot stills in the world.
Oh, wow.
typically pot stills a lot nowadays are copper. Okay. And so that's a very, it's got kind of almost a licorice note to it. It's really interesting. That's also my brand.
It smells like licorice a little bit.
It's got a really interesting, anise note to it. So it's pretty interesting.
Oh, I'm excited.
All right. I'm pouring another
one. That first bottle was fantastic. I really enjoyed that.
I've been preaching the good word of 13 episode seasons.
Oh yeah.
Versus 23 episodes with a lot of fodder. How happy are you that we are in this era where almost any show worth being on that's truly going to I would say hit the iconic status, like, you know, Sons of Anarchy or any of these, all 11 to 13 episode seasons.
Absolutely.
How grateful. Do you ever see yourself going back to if the right show? Is it a deal breaker at this point?
I'm not going to say never, because there is something beautiful about 22 episode paycheck. I'm not going to lie. Because you basically work for 10 months out of the year and you have like a normal payment schedule. Like, you know, you get a check every couple weeks or whatever. 10 to, you know, summer 8, episodes, summer 13, those type of episodic structures, you're really only working no more than six months, sometimes around three and a half is for Another Life, my show on Netflix. That can be
nice plug.
Thank you so much. I'm, you know, not that drunk. you have to be really careful as a younger actor to know that if you're signing on to be a regular on a show and it's only going to shoot for 3.5 months and you sign a contract that is potentially financially not what you want or what you're going to need, you are stuck. You're not going anywhere because you're only working 3.5 months out of the year guaranteed. And that network, studio, whomever has the ability to stop you from doing other things because they own you. Now that was fine and dandy when it was 22 episodes because you really only had 2 months off a year. And I understand it. There might be conflicts, but when it's 3.5, it's a hard road in front of you. And like our show, Another Life, I think it was 15 months between season one and season two. I cannot imagine the financial sort of strain to not work for 15 months as a newer actor who has a team that takes more than half. That's hard. So there are positives and negatives to that schedule. And most of the negatives are financial. The positives are insurmountable. You can go forever because I love the idea of less episodes. They're tight. They're meaningful. They're always where they need to be because everyone's rested, actors to writers, to directors, to everyone. It's fresh. You get to 22. There's a lull. There's always a lull right in the middle, probably between episode 13 and 18. Where everyone wants to go home. It's hard. It's a long marathon.
You've been asked by other people what sci-fi projects you would want to work on. And you said it's been difficult. This is a difficult question. Like, you know, what else would you want to do? Is there a superhero in particular that has spoken to you, a storyline in that realm? That a little different question, because I know it's because the Rock has gone on record as saying Black Adam spoke to him. He actually campaigned to become Black Adam.
I don't know. You know, if I could have picked a career based on my sort of adoration for my father, who gave me my love of, you know, I say this all the time, but it's the truth. He gave me my love of film and genre and television. Like he really just instilled in me this sort of ever-present craving for fantasy escape. You know, my dad gave me that. So if I could have gone from the beginning of my career and sort of put down on paper the career that would make my father happy, I feel like I did it. Like, I feel like this is it, you know, like from start to finish, including the Western in the middle. I think that's sort of, you know, his thing. But I don't know. I've never wanted to go back to your initial question. I've never wanted to play the hero. I don't enjoy it. It's not fun for me to be on the right side of things most of the time. I've always had a desire to play Typhoid Mary from the beginning of my career. I wanted to play her, and she's never really been a little bit in Elektra, but never really been explored. And I've always really wanted to play that villain.
That's one
cool as hell.
So I might be out of the loop here. Do you mean the actual Typhoid Mary, or is there a superhero in the DC universe that is called Typhoid Mary?
No, the actual type. There is a villain in that world, in the world of Daredevil and Elektra, and that exists, called Typhoid Mary. And she is very interesting and very evil. Like, there's no redeeming qualities, I don't think.
What do you got left?
So I have got,
you want to try your birth year bottle?
The Evan Williams. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's do it.
Kentucky Straight. I cannot wait to take a picture of this and send it to my dad.
There's no promise it's good, because there's a thing about Dusty's. The era for bourbon back then, the best bourbons ever made were made back then. Currently, there's so much bourbon drinking that the production methods are so much more mass produced. The oak is younger. They're using stainless steel fermenters. So whiskey is not quite as good as it used to be. But back then, nobody was buying whiskey as much as they were producing. So I think that's going to be good. It should be good. Evan Williams
Robin
is a safe bet.
Know. Robin, honey.
Is he a whiskey guy?
Yeah. He knows. He knows more than I do.
Oh, hey, I can send more stuff
to him.
Will
you come try this and tell me if it's good?
After this, we can knock out the honey cask and you know, let me get.
Oh, I think it's good. Yeah. I think it's good, but he'll be able. Well, this is real good, I think.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. He's literally in his boxers. He's going to take a shower. Sorry.
Thank you, Robin. Oh, he probably can't hear me. You got headphones on.
It's really mild, he says. Yeah. There's no burn or anything.
I'm intrigued if this has happened to you. So Matthew McConaughey carries with him a level of charisma and energy that it's hard to ever think for a second that he is insecure or doubting himself or the awkward guy at the table. And he told this beautiful story of him completely embarrassing himself in front of the Coen brothers. Has there been a story you were so excited to get a meeting with someone or a dinner with someone to maybe potentially work together, and you just absolutely ate it?
You know, there's a lot of stories where I've like ate it, you know. I mean, Nathan Fillion and I still joke about the fact that I auditioned for Castle, and we thought, like, you know, being friends with him and coming off Battlestar, that it was like, you got this. And I remember going into that room and giving by far the worst pile of crap audition I've ever had in my life with him, with Nathan. So much so that when we walked out of the room, he literally looked at me and went, "I'm so sorry." And it was like, no, that's fine. That's fine. I'm just going to go and pretend that didn't happen. But, you know, I embarrass myself all the time. I'm quite good at it, because I try to, you know, I spent so many years being worried about what people thought of me that I didn't fully live my life. I felt like a shell of myself all the time because I was so worried about fitting into a mold, you know, that I thought that in some way that was going to like safeguard my happiness. If people couldn't see through, you know, that and see the how insecure and scared I was at all the time at all times. And I got you know, cancer when I was 27, and sort of woke up from that surgery. I kid you not, woke up from the surgery, and I was like, I am never going to not say what's on my mind ever again. And I went a little too far that direction. And like, people were like, maybe we should calm it down a little bit, sweetheart. But I embarrass myself all the time. You know, I say what I want to say when I want to say it, but there is a time and a place for it. Right. You know, I'm smart enough and I've been around long enough to know that at this point in my career. But I embarrass myself all the time, but I also think it's funny, you know, I also think it's funny. A fan wanted me to, the other day, said something along the lines of that they were having a really bad day and they needed a pep talk and they wanted to laugh. And so I couldn't think of much, but I was like, you know, I still sleep with my baby blanket. Like, I don't, you know, don't look to me. I'm doing the best I can. I still cuddle with the, with my JCPenney baby blanket. And so it was, and that made this person laugh because I think that it was like, oh good. She's just as, you know, just as sort of
human
lost as the rest of us.
So we've got one thing left and it's our honey bottle.
Yes.
We've got your birthday bottle. Keep the, what is it? The 10 high.
Yes. My birthday, right?
Yeah, keep the 10 high for your birthday. Again, no promises. It's good. There was some bad bourbon back then, but, this, I thought of you specifically because of your video at your mom's place, learning how to deal with bees. And I believe you even said you're allergic to bees.
I am.
So, that is a cocktail in a bottle. It is a tremendously, flavorful, intense honey whiskey. That was a one-off. We did like, I think 200 bottles and that was it.
Well, and this is the actual whiskey that's been soaked in the honey pots, honey barrels, honey.
Yeah. So we took an Elijah Craig barrel and filled it full of honey, 53 gallons full of honey, and then aged it for a few months and then dumped the honey out. And we sold it to our local bourbon group, the Houston Bourbon Society, shout out to them. And then what was left of the barrel soaked into the wood, we filled the barrel full of whiskey and let it age for six to eight months, something like that. So what you have in front of you is the Honey Barrel by Balcones, 61%. This will put hair on your chest. I really can't appreciate, I can't thank you enough for doing this, and enjoy the whiskey. Let me know what you think when you get a few more pours into it another time.
Oh my gosh.
Thanks again.
This is amazing. Thank you so much. This has been so much fun. And I literally feel like it's Christmas over here. We're going to go have some good Italian food though. So it'll soak it all up.
Well, enjoy it. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you so much. Bye.
Balcones' first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.